Hi, welcome to the Heart of It. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Hart. I'm a clinical psychologist, a wife, a mother of two teenagers, and I have been using alternative medicine for my family and friends for over 30 years. I bring you interviews with experts in the fields of nutrition, alternative methods of healing, and relationships, so that you can have the latest, most practical information available when you make important decisions that affect your health, heart, and home. My topic today is childhood obesity. As you know, the incidence of obesity has been rising in this country in all age groups, and this has in turn raised concern about addressing this issue early in a child's life in hoping of preventing them from having to deal with this problem later in their lives. Currently, over 60% of our population of adults is obese, and the rate of obesity in children has tripled in the last 30 years. My guest today is Dr. Christine Wood, a pediatrician who is an expert in the fields of nutrition and children's health. She is an internationally acclaimed speaker and author of the book, How to Get Kids to Eat Great and Love It. If you've heard Dr. Wood on my program before, you know that this show is going to be full of useful information that you'll be able to put into practice immediately, not only for your children, but for yourself as well. I also hope that you'll tell others about my shows so that we can spread this information to people who can benefit from it. If you would like more information about Dr. Wood, her links, other topics I have scheduled, or me, I invite you to visit my website, www.theheartofit.com. That's heart spelled H-A-R-T, like my name. My guest, Dr. Christine Wood, and my friend, is a practicing pediatrician and international expert on children's nutrition. As I said, she is the author of a wonderful book that I recommend that you get, called How to Get Kids to Eat Great and Love It, which is in its second printing. The reason that I personally recommend this book is because it is designed to answer nearly any question that you have about children's nutrition. It's very easy to use, easy to read. And one other thing that she does in this book that I rarely see is that she shares the research that backs up each of her conclusions and recommendations. Dr. Wood's interviews and articles have been published in numerous magazines, and she was a guest writer for Newsweek's special edition, Your Child. She is a spokesperson for the international nutritional company USANA and is on their medical advisory board. She also serves on the Coalition on Children and Weight in San Diego. And I might add, she is a wife and a mother of a teenage son herself, so she understands firsthand the issues involved in monitoring our children's eating habits. Dr. Wood, welcome to the Heart of It.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
I think we should start out this interview today by having you explain to us what some of the health problems are that are associated with childhood obesity.
Well, certainly there's so much in the news about this problem, and it's certainly receiving lots more attention in this day and age. And really the concern, it's not that it's a body image thing and that we want all kids to, you know, look like models and stuff, which I think sometimes the kids think that is the message that they're hearing. But our concern as health professionals is really dealing with the health issues that go along with it, the health risks. You know, one statistic I heard is that one in three children born today are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes, which that's just astounding when you think about it. I mean, the fact that children today may live shorter than their own parents is not a really good thought as far as when we look ahead at what we're offering our children. And a lot of these issues have to do with lifestyle, diet and exercise, and just all of those things that sort of surround that. And certainly diabetes is one of the major things that we're starting to see in younger children and teenagers as a result of their lifestyle. And we're also understanding that even things like heart disease, I mean, that risk, a lot of people say, oh, that doesn't start till you're an adult, but that risk is developing even as a child. And, you know, Linda, I was at a conference about a year ago, and one of the researchers there, he actually predicted that we will start seeing heart attacks in teenagers in the emergency room showing up in our lifetime. Which, again, that's just a frightening thought if you're a parent, you're thinking about,
it is,
you know,
Christine, and, you know, I know there's more to say about this, but we do have to go to a very short break. Right back. We're back with Dr. Christine Wood, a specialist in children's nutrition. And we were talking about some frightening statistics that certainly must make every mother that would hear this be concerned, to think that one in three children would develop type 2 diabetes, and that heart disease is being found, you said, in teenagers, did you say?
Well, there have been some studies that have looked at teenagers that have died from other causes, and they are identifying that they already have early signs of heart disease as far as fatty streaks and sometimes even plaques that have already developed in their heart vessels. So, yes, we do know that these risks really are starting at a young age, and it has everything to do with their lifestyle and their eating habits and exercise.
So how much of this rising incidence, there's the two factors. There's what's, you know, maybe genetic predispositions and factors within the person, and there's also the environment and the eating habits. How do you figure out what's most important or what the different factors are that play into this?
Well, there certainly are a lot of different factors that contribute to this rise and this problem. Genetics is one of the issues. We do know that genetics has a role to play. If both parents are overweight, that child has a much higher risk of becoming overweight themselves. Now, you sometimes do think, though, how much of that might just be to what the parents are eating also, and how much is truly just genetics. But we do feel that genetics has a role to play. However, if you look at, for example, Japanese culture, and those Japanese people who come to the United States and live and eat more of the Western-style foods, they have a much higher risk of developing overweight than those Japanese who live in their own culture. So that does speak to the environmental effects and impact that it has. You mentioned that, you know, I have my own son. I mean, he's 12, and one of the things that I think we all battle as parents is just how, the whole environment around us really influences our children. And I know you have teenage kids, too, and, you know, they see TVs, they see how the other kids eat, they drive around town, they see what kind of restaurant choices are there when they go out with friends and families. And
the commercials on TV are the worst.
Oh, especially for the younger kids. And
yeah.
it makes it very difficult because our children are receiving messaging all the time about this is a food that it's for you. And, you know, with over 12,000 processed food choices introduced every year into the United States, and you know a lot of those are marketed to kids. I always tell people, you know, that fruit and vegetable aisle has not changed a whole lot since I was a kid.
Oh,
it's still
that's
one
so
way.
True.
I know. But the whole inside of a grocery
I never thought of it that way, but it's true. I mean, that doesn't change. And everything else, it just keeps getting, the aisles keep getting higher and longer.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, you can't go to the grocery store without seeing that they've introduced a new cracker or a new cookie or a new whatever. And many of these choices are marketed to kids. I mean, I always tell people, where were fruit roll-ups when we were growing up? You know, now kids want to consider that a fruit choice because it's got the word fruit in it. And that's a whole area of food that really, truly was just marketed to children. So it makes it difficult.
And it's not just that in the grocery stores, the aisles of the pre-cooked foods, you know, the deli, they're expanding the delis. And they're expanding the frozen food sections with the prepackaged foods. So people, I think, are cooking less.
Oh, yeah. It's so convenient. And, you know, we certainly know people are busy. You have a lot of working families. You kind of mentioned the commercials. And one thing I encourage parents to do is when your children are even young, tell them what commercials are. You know, that this is marketing. It doesn't always have your best interest in mind. Somebody paid money to create this whole commercial, And their object is to really to get you to buy their products. And that product may not always be about what is best for them. And I think we can really coach our younger children especially to understand that, because I'll tell you, when they see their favorite cartoon character promoting some cereal, they think it's all about that cartoon character, and of course they want that product. And that, as a parent, makes it difficult because, I mean, as you know, we don't see many vegetable and fruit commercials out there competing with that. So it's a real challenge.
I used to make it a game with my children. I'd say, now what are they trying to sell you? And they'd oh, they're trying to sell me this. And then we would look at that, and I would say, now, if this was healthy and parents wanted to buy this for the children anyway, why would they be spending all this money advertising it? There must be some reason. And is there any reason that a parent wouldn't want to buy this for their child? And then we would look at the grocery store, and we'd see all the sugar or the white flour, whatever it was, and they developed a sense about that. But you can make it light and make it a game.
Sure. You know, I mean, I remember one commercial my son saw when he was younger. It was about some pro athlete advertising something for McDonald's. And he said, you know, to me at that point, which made me feel like I had done my job, he said, Mom, why would a professional athlete eat McDonald's? That's so bad for him. And so, you know, I feel like he got the message. He understood.
Oh, boy, yeah, that's one of those moments, isn't it?
Exactly. It wasn't all about the commercial, you know, that there was something behind it. And certainly we as parents and educators or any arena that we're in, I think the schools can also tackle this, can teach kids about marketing and what the hype is and what, you know, what it really is about.
And how about making those healthy choices when people are eating out? Is there anything different about helping our children to make those healthy choices versus just as adults? I think we by now have an idea of what we should eat and should not eat. But what about kids when they have that peer pressure or it just tastes good?
Yeah.
You know, they want to eat the food that it's really hard when they see those options there. Even I do. When I go to a restaurant, I'm much more likely to eat the food that's not healthy that I would never eat at home. But I see it and I smell it and I know it's going to taste great and my willpower falters.
Yeah, eating out is such a trend that has obviously increased over the years. Yeah, I have to say, when I was growing up, eating out happened maybe twice a year. It was a rare, rare treat. And, you know, you appreciated, you know, the moment that you knew that you were going to eat out. You just had such a huge appreciation with it. I think today's families tend to eat out, many families at least average about 3 to 4 times of eating out a week. And we do know that in the restaurants, obviously, and it's another kind of marketing attack, is that they have really created this whole culture for kids to have their own meals. Now, why do kids have to have their own meals? Again, that's something that sort of got ingrained and started, but it is kind of a difficult battle now that we as families have to sort of look at, because we know that what generally shows up on those kid meals is not that healthy in many situations. So a couple thoughts for that. When my son was little, before he could read, I really just most of the time would order off the main menu and have him eat a little bit of what I ate. I didn't even let him really get too involved with the kids' menu. Now, obviously, as he's gotten older and going out with friends, I mean, he knows and he does choose that. But I do have to say, at his age now, a lot of times he will look at the regular menu and wants to share something with me, which is great. Mm. And that's a really good strategy just about eating out in general, is share meals, share things, because today's portions in our restaurants are generally very big, and when we start to learn that that's a portion size, what they found is even when you go into the home environment, then you're sort of distorted as far as what a portion size is. So sharing meals and trying to not always order off the kids' menu is one thing. Also the sodas. I mean, that's such a source of extra calories for kids. You know, and I know you don't want to be the food police and say you can never have soda, but you know, you may want to encourage your kids at times to make another choice. You know, how about water today? And I do that a lot, especially when I know we're traveling a lot and we're going to be eating out a lot, that my son kind of knows that there's really a limit. He's not going to have a soda with every meal because it literally can look like that after a while. So those are some strategies for the eating out choices. And, you know, hopefully if parents would start to say to restaurants, hey, could you offer a fruit or a vegetable instead of French fries, or would you consider milk instead of soda, you know, for no extra charge, if we start to create that culture, hopefully that will change that industry also.
And sometimes if you just ask, they will accommodate a few changes.
Oh, true,
like that,
yeah.
Even if it's not on the menu, you know, tomatoes instead of fries or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And it is just kind of about changing the culture that we've created, because I really do feel like our kids just sort of accept that this is the way they should eat. And we have to sort of examine that and say, how can we look at it in a different way?
That's why I really appreciate you being on my show, Dr. Wood, and why I do this show is so that we can get the word out. And one by one, I hope we will make a difference by having this expectation and expecting more from restaurants and fast food companies, because our children's health is in the balance.
Mm, true.
People like you and Rochelle Davis of Generation Green that I interviewed are working to educate and improve the quality of foods being offered to our children in school lunches also. And I've seen there is a bit of a change. There's starting to be more consciousness about school food. But I'm wondering if you have some suggestions in regard to in this area also, because, you know, we send our children to school and we don't really have control of what they're going to eat in that school lunch line.
Yeah, a couple things parents should know about and be aware of. First of all, I do a lot in the community working with schools, helping them maybe look at their nutrition and physical activity policies, et cetera. But there, in Congress, I think it was a year ago or so, passed a law, a congressional law, to say that as of July 2006, all schools that are part of the USDA's National School Lunch Program, which is generally most public schools, they get subsidized for their lunch programs, will need to have a local wellness policy in place that will include nutrition and physical activity guidelines. Well, this is great news because it gives us an opportunity to perhaps look at the schools and for the schools to examine what they're doing and perhaps implement some changes. What we're trying to do here in San Diego is create some partnerships between some organizations around town, like American Cancer Society and Five a Day and some various other things, to help them, the schools, maybe look at steps that they can take. One is that we're encouraging schools to develop a school wellness advisory committee that would involve teachers, parents, students, school nurses, any other community members. Health professionals. I think getting health professionals on board is really important for these schools. And really come up with something for the student wellness that's going to promote something that's going to be meaningful and that they will be accountable for. And that's really our hope that's going to happen nationwide. But I'm going to tell you, it's going to also be partly up to the parents to say, what are you doing? And to question their schools. And I would really encourage parents to look at this local school wellness policy. It's if you just go to the search for it, you'll find it on the USDA website, and find out what it is and see how maybe if they can get involved and they can help, you know, support this whole effort.
Well, speaking of getting involved, I would like you to give your contact information so that people will know how to get your book. And I know that you give talks all over the world, and I think probably the best way for them to find out about that is to go to your website and see the latest information and latest things that you're doing.
Right. My website is kids, which is K-I-D-S, eatgreat.com, and they can order my book there. They can also contact me by email through there. There's a contact page. So, yes, kidseatgreat.com is my website, and that's where to order my book and to contact me through.
Maybe it'll be on again and they'll be able to see it. Just check into Dr. Wood's website every so often and see what she's doing. She is full of information, much more than we can cover in just one short show here. That's why we're having several shows to keep up to date on children's nutritional issues. And we'll be back in a few moments for more of The Heart of It. We're back with Dr. Christine Wood, an expert in children's nutrition, and we're talking about childhood obesity today and how to prevent it with some practical suggestions. And so we have to talk about TV and computer games, Dr. Wood. We know we need to increase the activity level of our children, but we also know that especially, I think, the boys just can't drag them away from the TV and the computers.
Yeah.
So what do you suggest?
Yeah, this is part two of this whole issue that we're dealing with that's contributing to this epidemic of childhood obesity, is the type of activities our children choose to do. You know, one thing we do recognize is that girls particularly, they tend to be a little less active naturally. They tend to gravitate to often more sedentary activities, you know, maybe playing with dolls or coloring or arts and crafts, those types of things. So with the girls, that can be an issue in their arena. And with the boys and girls, I mean, TV and computer is really a whole nother arena. You know, I certainly see, especially with some of the boys, this whole video game culture with PlayStation or GameCubes or whatever they have, and the type of computer games that they get involved with is another issue. And then as you get into the older kids, of course, you have internet, instant messaging or emails, and how that also consumes a lot of their time. All of these things add up to time really just sitting. And we do know that just about any activity will probably burn more calories than just sitting and doing TV or computer, etc. A couple things that I really highly recommend that parents focus on is, one, to not allow children to eat in front of the television or computer if they choose to do that, but not to eat, not associate eating with those environments. Eating should really be reserved for when you are sitting at the dinner table or the kitchen area or wherever it is. So really try to focus on using designated areas to eat. The second thing that can be very important is to try to not have a TV or computer in the child's bedroom. There have been a number of studies looking at especially television usage really increases if a child has that available in their own bedroom. So not to allow that, because it just invites too much more opportunities for that child to choose to do that activity. And then the third thing is just figuring out how to set limits with these. The American Academy of Pediatrics says no TV under the age of two, which, you know, when I tell parents that, they look at me like I'm from another planet, because I think for many families, especially if you have older kids, and you have the one under two, it's I know it's difficult. But I think the main key is just really setting limits. What I try to tell families is during weekdays, if you can try to limit to less than an hour a day on computer and TV and all these kind of sedentary activities combined, and on the weekends, less than 2 hours. The American Academy says less than 1 to 2 hours a day of this type of sedentary media time. And one trick that I've given parents to help manage that when you're dealing with kids, you might give them tokens that represent like a half hour of media time, and you can give them their tokens at the beginning of the week, and they have to basically cash that in. It's like spending money. And it's something that's tangible. You know, you have this token that represents that 30 minutes. And so, you know, that might be one tip that parents can use to try and help manage that time a little bit.
But that's really a great idea, because otherwise it just sort of slips through your fingers. You know, it just sort of goes by and kids don't even realize they're watching for a long time.
Exactly. And even setting the timer.
That's very good advice. Does that amount of time include the amount of time, though, that they're using the computer for schoolwork?
I do exclude that, because that is schoolwork, and that's I exclude that time in it. I'm usually talking about recreational time on the computer, or, you know, obviously playing games and that type of thing.
Okay, because I know that my children spend a lot of time doing homework on their computers, and I think they spend more than that amount of time per day just doing their homework, so I wasn't sure how that was going to work. So I'm glad to hear that we can exclude that little bit.
Yeah.
And how about increasing their activity level? I mean, we just have about 30 seconds here, but Just to have them involved in sports after school,
That? I think it's really up to the child to find what they like. We get some kids who don't like team sports, maybe looking at individual sports, but even trying to find family activities, going out for a walk on the weekends or a bike trip, or you know, really trying to involve the families to get active together. I think that's really key. And what you have to do, you have to write it on your calendar and plan it out. Because I will tell you that otherwise, if you don't, it kind of falls through the cracks and it doesn't get done. So make a date with your family to do these things.
Okay. You know what? I misread the time. We have more time. I'm sorry. Oh, boy. So we have time for another question.
Okay.
What strategies can parents use to prevent their young children from being overweight? Now, you talked about no TV before 2 years old. Do you have any other suggestions real early in life, maybe about sugar? Or I know for my children, I said nothing sweeter than a banana because that was the sweetest natural thing I could think of. Do you suggest that, or is that being too stringent, do you think?
No, I think you definitely have a lot of control when they're young. So I tell parents after the age of one, lots of fresh foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lots of that in that age group. Try to limit that exposure too much of those processed food choices. You know, they do taste better. They generally have more fat, more sugar, more salt. And so getting your children accustomed to eating a lot of those kind of fresh foods is so key early on. And we do know, studies have shown that if kids eating choices, the food choices that they like, are fairly well established by the time they hit 2 to 3. So that's why it's so important to shape that early on. And not to say that they're never going to get any of those other choices and processed food choices.
Fantastic. That's really great advice. And we will be back in just a moment with more with Dr. Christine Wood. And we're back with more of The Heart of It with Dr. Christine Wood, an expert in children's nutrition. Christine, if a family has a child who is already overweight, how should they approach this? What should they do?
Well, first of all, they should really at least check with their doctor, their child's doctor, one, to really make sure they are overweight, because sometimes I've found a parent thinks their child is overweight, but really when we do the calculations and we have these BMI charts, body mass index charts now we use, they may not really be overweight. So we want to sort of make sure that the parents aren't getting overly excited about an issue that might not be a problem. And hopefully they can also get some advice and some support from their pediatrician or family doctor, whoever they're dealing with their child. The basic principles would be it really has to be a family effort. If you start having your overweight child, as an example, eating only certain things and limiting their food and making them feel like they have some restrictions in their diet, but everybody else doesn't, especially if you have children in the family who might be normal weighted, which I have some families I work with that way, it makes it really tough. And you want to be supportive. You want to make sure they understand you love them at any weight, and it's not just about the weight, and don't want to focus on that. But I try to have parents focus on making healthy choices. And when I'm talking especially to younger children, I talk about power foods, getting foods that maybe give you more energy, that are going to help you grow strong, help you stay healthier. So we put it in kind of a positive light. You don't want to talk about it as good and bad foods, because if they break down and they eat a bad food, especially when you're dealing with younger children, then they think they're bad. And that's not a lesson we necessarily want to give. So talking with the families about how they can sort of manage what they bring into the home is one of the strategies I use. In other words, foods that they choose to buy. You know, I'm going to tell you, if the chips are around and the soda and juice are around, they get eaten and drunk. And if they're not available and they're only there perhaps as special treats, or if you eat out enough that they get those special things on occasion on the outside, then that's a real start. So looking at what sort of comes into the home is a real, real big thing that I have parents really examine, what kind of choices they're bringing in. And just little things like cut up the fruit and make it available so that it's really easy. I remember with my son when he was little, he sometimes say, you know, right before dinner, I'm starving. you know, be running in and out of the house, playing outside, and a lot of times I'd just stick out a bowl of carrots right there, you know, in the garage, near the garage there, where he'd kind of walk in and out and traipse in and out, and he'd eat them. And so how you offer the foods and make them easy and available is also real, real key. When you're talking about families, I do have a program that I am partnering with a family practice physician, Dr. Ray Strand, and you can check into it on my website at kidseatgreat.com, and it's called Releasing Fat. And I am working, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to work with adults, but I'm also coaching them online to give them information about how they might work with things with their children. And I am also screening and working with a small group of teenagers also with this program. And it's a lifestyle journaling program. They log in every day and they just let me know what they're eating, and then I can examine that and give them feedback by online as far as what they're doing. So it's a real great way to sort of have a coach, basically, a lifestyle coach. And so they can check that out on my website at kidseatgreat.com.
So in other words, the teenager would be writing down in a journal what they're eating and put that into their computer, and you would actually review that,
yeah,
and give them feedback.
Exactly. And there's been studies that have shown that journaling what you eat is a very, very valuable approach to people who are trying to make lifestyle changes. And by having somebody sort of coach them and encourage and look at some of the options that they're making can be very, very helpful.
And sometimes it's really nice to have someone else giving the child that feedback rather than the parent. You know, the child just, after a while, if you've said it a few times, they don't want to hear it anymore from you. But if the doctor says it, sometimes it's easier for them to take and put into practice.
Oh, definitely. And especially, obviously, when you're talking about the teenagers. I mean, the teens really are generally needing outside help. It's very difficult if it comes from the parents, and it's the parents who are bugging them or making it an issue. So we really do try to, you know, have them step aside with some of that.
Are there other times when families, that's one step that a family can take to get some professional help that's really convenient, right? You know, just using the computer in your home. Are there other times that families should seek professional help in other ways if their child is overweight?
Yes. Those kids who certainly have any other health issues, if they have, generally what I do when I'm screening my kids who are significantly overweight, I do some blood work on them, and obviously a blood pressure. So if they're having any other issues like high cholesterol, blood pressure problems, obviously, any things like joint and joint problems, hip problems, et cetera, which we know can also happen. Any kind of emotional issues. We do get a number of these kids who are significantly overweight who may also have an underlying depression going along with that. These are times when families really need to be seeking professional help, because you're dealing then with perhaps some other medical complications dealing with this disease. And I hate to say disease, but this problem. So yeah, I do recommend that at some point they should also have that checkup with their health professional to establish that there are no other underlying problems. And also they sometimes can point them to local resources that they know that might be helpful for them, either the family or the child, in this arena. One other strategy I just want to mention too that I sometimes use with the kids when they're teenagers that I've had worked really well with some of my
now.
What's that?
We do have 30 seconds.
Okay,
now.
With some of my boys is weightlifting, and I'll encourage them to, with some training, to do some light weightlifting, and that can be very valuable for some of these kids in building muscle and helping their metabolism.
Fantastic. It's so helpful to hear about some of these ideas, so that parents understand what a multifaceted problem this can be, and it can have many, many ways to approach it, both in terms of what's causing it and how to treat it. We'll be back in a few moments with more. We're back with our last segment with Dr. Christine Wood, talking about children's nutrition as it relates to childhood obesity. And we've talked a lot about eating out, But what about eating in? Do you have some suggestions for when we're eating at home?
Yeah, and these are really strategies that work with, you know, all families. It doesn't really have to do with kids who are overweight, but sometimes you can, you know, focus on these perhaps a little more when you have overweight kids. One is looking, obviously, at the kind of cooking style you have. We do understand that frying foods and using a lot of butter, et cetera, probably add, you know, extra calories in there. So perhaps using things like olive oil, canola oil, those are also heart-healthier type of oils to be using in your cooking. You know, doing more stir fries rather than frying. One thing that I do for kind of French fries is I make these sweet potato fries, and I just cut up sweet potatoes, and I put a little olive oil, put them on a cookie sheet in the oven at 350 for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and you have these kind of sweet potato fries that my son loves. So, you know, trying to look for ways.
We make that, too, and my kids love
it. It's easy.
Yeah.
And so finding ways to do that are great. Other things, too, are looking at your portion sizes when you're serving foods. And if you have family-style meals where there's, you know, lots of excess food at the table, you know, we do find that a lot of time that gets eaten. So I often suggest making the plates up in the kitchen, taking it out, any extra food, you know, a lot of excess that you may have, wrap that up before dinner even starts so it's put away in the refrigerator as leftovers for another meal. And if you're going to have extra foods that are available, have extra fruits and vegetables. And offering fruits as part of every meal is a great strategy, especially with some of the younger kids, because most of them like fruits. Some of them may be a little less, you know, open to some of the vegetables, but I do feel if they're doing well with the fruits, that's a good start. So you can definitely incorporate like a fruit salad or something like that with your meals. And then one other tip I give, too, for a lot of my families with the overweight kids, some of the kids are sort of fast eaters, I find. So I'll tell them to make a rule that nobody gets seconds until everybody's done with first. And that gives their body maybe a chance to get that signal that they are full, because we do know that takes sometimes 5-10 minutes. And so helping them slow down a little bit by just slowing the pace is another effective strategy.
That's very, very good advice. I know that we often do smoothies for dessert, fruit smoothies, but we can throw in a few carrots and even a chunk of cabbage in that fruit smoothie. And for some reason, it really ups the nutrition, but it just that you don't taste it. And it's another way of getting a little bit of extra fresh vegetables.
Yeah, that's a great tip, yeah.
Now, there's so much attention on different diets to eat. Adults are overwhelmed and confused. What information makes the most sense to you? You know, what information should we pay attention to when we're making our food choices for our children?
Yeah, I mean, over the years, we've obviously seen that pendulum swing. You know, we went through that low-fat craze for a while, low-sugar. Now we're into the kind of that low-carb phase still. I think that's sort of dying out, though, from what I see. You know, we do know that it really is about calories in and calories out. But there is some good medical information that's looking at the types of carbohydrates that we eat. And I think that's one of the reasons some of these low-carb diets have been successful, is because some of the people are cutting out some of these less healthy carbohydrate choices, which unfortunately are a lot of the carbs most kids and adults even crave, you know, just your breads and processed foods and cookies, crackers, those types of things. Yeah, if you look at the new food guide pyramid, and there is a new food guide pyramid available now. It's quite interactive on the website. You can design or get your own recommendations for your own food guide pyramid depending on your activity level, your age, and you know, whether you're male or female. And that's at mypyramid.gov, G-O-V, so mypyramid.gov. There's even a kids section, too, with some little interactive games that your younger kids could get involved with. But one of the new things that they changed there was they kind of took out that, remember the bottom of the pyramid with all those breads and grains?
Yes.
Well, now they're saying grains, but they're saying half of those grains should be whole grains. Now, that's a real change in thinking for many of us, because many of us don't think in terms of whole grains. Things like quinoa, amaranth, you know, millet, those are real whole grains. Oatmeal is a whole grain. Barley, brown rice is more of a whole grain than white rice. So kind of looking at that and finding ways to incorporate that into diets, I think, is a really effective strategy for all families to really be looking at and trying to find ways to do that. One thing you can do is you can just add millet into a little bit of your turkey burgers or hamburgers. You know, millet is actually found in a lot of those garden burgers that you eat. So add some of those whole grains to things that you're already cooking and eating. And generally, I'll find your kids won't either notice or it really doesn't change the you know, content of the food so that it's going to be so dramatic. Because most of us, you know, most kids are not going to sit down and have a bowl of amaranth for breakfast. So,
I've made millet as a cereal, and I put millet in bread, but I would be concerned about putting millet in a hamburger because I would be afraid it wouldn't cook fast enough.
Yeah, you can cook that ahead of time and then add it in there.
Some of the grains are
quicker cooking. So if they are, slower cooking grains, you do want to cook them first. I should have mentioned that. And then you can add it in. And you can add that into even pasta sauces. So find ways to add it or combine. I mean, I even have parents who will mix like half white rice and half brown rice, or add some pearl barley, which is a little quicker grain, to some of the rices that you make. I actually throw that into our rice cooker with the white rice. So there are just some tricks that you can use to try and get that out there.
Well, this hour has gone very quickly, Dr. Wood. I want to thank you so much. I always just love having you on the show because you're just so full of grounded, practical information that people can use to improve their children's health. And I know your heart is with that and mine is too. And I hope that people listening to this show will share it with other people too and will get this word out so that your recommendations can be widely heard.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me as a guest.
Okay, and I'll have you back again. Thank you so much, and we'll be back to wrap it up in just a few moments. You've been listening to The Heart of It. I want to thank Dr. Christine Wood again for helping us get to the heart of how to create good eating habits for our children. You'll find more information about Dr. Wood, her links, my future shows, and how to contact me on my website, www.theheartofit.com. That's heart spelled H-A-R-T. And it's just so good to have someone like Dr. Wood to help us make healthy choices for our children. I hope you'll be sharing my shows with your family and friends so we can get this information out to as many people as possible. I met a young mother at the grocery store just this morning who might have avoided the difficult, painful biopsy if she had heard my program on breast thermography. So you never know who these shows might help. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join me again for more of The Heart of It.